yeah, there's obviously discrimination in a lot of kitchens for women. Thankfully, I've never been part of those kitchens. I've been extremely fortunate to work for some of the most amazing employers, amazing companies, where skill matters and nothing else matters.
Hello and welcome to the Alien Chronicles. Today I have our first chef on the show and I'm so excited, and we will let her introduce herself.
Hi, I'm Haya and I'm currently working at 11 Madison Park. I'm from Pakistan and that's pretty much it.
And you've done a lot of other things. You have trailed at some of the most prominent restaurants. Can you name a few?
I mean, last year I took a year off and I was just trailing at different restaurants trying to see what was catching my interest, because when I quit my job at John George, I just wanted something different. I went to Per Se. In London, I was at Ramsay's, you know, a bunch of restaurants, Le Bernardin, just trying them out.
And you are, as you said, you're from Pakistan. You grew up in Karachi, right?
Yeah.
So as I was prepping for your interview, I read that your love for food and cooking is influenced by your grandmother. And she taught you like these like nuances of flavors and spices. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I mean, when I was growing up, I was always a fat, hungry kid and I loved eating, and I still love eating. And my grandmother was an exceptional cook. She could really take the most simplest of ingredients and make something really amazing with it. And I learned a lot from her. Like, I regret not learning a lot more. But I think the first thing she taught me how to make was like these soft scrambled eggs, which my grandfather would eat, you know, and I would eat a lot of eggs when I was young. She taught me how to make this banana kele ka salan, which is like banana sauteed in brown butter and some heavy cream. Delicious, you know, like you can't go wrong with that. I still make that sometimes if I have any bananas, you know, overripe. It's pretty great. But yeah, you know, she was a great influence. My mom is a really good cook, but she doesn't love cooking.
Oh, she's like me. I don't love cooking. I think I may just even dislike cooking. I don't know.
Like my sister, she doesn't feel like cooking is important. Like she has an entire family and she gets by just fine without cooking. I think it's a life skill. I think it's important to know like that you don't starve if you're ever stuck somewhere. But not everyone needs to know how to cook. What will we do as chefs if everybody knows how to cook really well?
That's
right?
True. So what pops up in your mind when you think about your grandmother's cooking? A spice, a flavor, something that just reminds you of her cooking?
I mean, I think more than cooking, her welcoming stance on food. Like, I don't think anybody ever entered our house or her house and left hungry. And I think that really stuck with me. It's very important. Like, that's how I show love and affection and friendship to people. Like, feeding people is more important than the food itself. Does that make sense? Like, the hospitality bit.
So Pakistani culture is like that. Please. Pakistani culture just centers around food and hospitality, and a woman is supposed to cook great food and she takes pride in it. Yet we see that like cooking or being a chef is not a great profession for women in Pakistan. Do you find it hypocritical?
Honestly, no. I feel like the reason why being a chef, it's just a lot really hard on a human being. Like, it's a lot, because your cooking professionally is a lot different than cooking at home, right? It requires a lot more hours. It takes a lot of strain on your body. The timings never work out. Let's talk about, you know, the day is like, weekends are the busiest times. So I genuinely think like, there's obviously discrimination in a lot of kitchens for women. Thankfully, I've never been part of those kitchens. I've been extremely fortunate to work for some of the most amazing employers, amazing companies, where skill matters and nothing else matters. But I also think like a lot of people choose not to be part of that lifestyle, you know, and not just females. Like, I see a lot of men and women come to this side of the profession and then they're like, we can't do this. We don't want to do this. It's not they can't, they just don't want to, because it's too much.
So what was motivation behind your decision to pursue this as a career?
I'm a little pigheaded. So once I decide to do something, it's do or die. It doesn't matter what the consequences are. And I think I'm on the war path to that.
And how did your parents react when you told them that? Because I was reading about you and it seems like within a span of a year, you dropped out of business school and law school and you decided to pursue this path. And I am just interested and, in fact, curious to know how your parents reacted to your decision.
My parents are extremely supportive. Like, I'm extremely, extremely fortunate and lucky. They adore me. They're supportive of every decision I take. They were a bit hesitant about, like, because obviously nobody, I come from a conservative business, career-oriented family, you know, like we're Maimans. We're either business or like a typical profession. My sister is a corporate lawyer. My brother's into business. So like me saying like, I want to cook is like,
what?
As a profession, like, what's the scope, you know, like,
did they use the sentence, kya tumne bavarchi banna hai? Did
they
say something like that?
My friends made fun of me because there's actually no term in Urdu for a professional cook. It's like bavarchi, khansama.
Yeah.
All these words. And, they always like, obviously, you know, ragged a little bit on me. But my parents were like, more of the semantics game. How is it going to work? What are the career prospects? How would you, you know, like, you have nothing to follow. But, you know, I did try the normal route where I took business school, but I just wasn't into it. Like, I'm not made for a desk job. I love working with my hands. I just love cooking. Like, I wanted to do this. At that time, I didn't know quite exactly what I was getting into. You know, like, I couldn't ever imagine, like, it would be this hard or it would require such commitment. You know, it was like more like Ratatouille and like Julia and Julia, where you're like, you and your little stove. Like, cooking school was more about like washing dishes and throwing garbage away and scrubbing garbage cans and mopping and sweeping the floor, which I'd actually never done in my life.
How is reality different from what your perception of being a chef was? And then when you talk about how hard it is, I've spoken to other chefs and they talk about, because of the nature of this work, it gets isolating. It is an isolating profession, and then you have long hours, and some people like suffer from depression. And have you noticed that around you? And how do you think people deal with things like that?
I think having a good kitchen family is very important. You know, like if you're talking about depression and isolation, the company and the restaurant you work for is very important. Like I said, I've been extremely lucky. I used to work for John George before. Now I work for 11 Madison. You know, chefs are, you know, when you do something wrong, they go at you. You know, they're not going to like be kind. That's the nature of the job, you know. People pay a lot of money and come to celebrate some really important occasions. Like, these people make reservations for months in advance. You know, it's a meal of a lifetime for them. So just because you're careless, the chef's not going to, you know, just let you get away with it, because it matters. You're only as good as your last meal. You know, I put bad food on your plate. You don't care about who I am. You care about that food, you know. So, yeah, they get really upset. But, you know, otherwise, they're extremely supportive. They're always like watching out for you. And as even colleagues, we always watch out for each other, like making sure like the other person's is not too isolated. We, no matter how late we end, we always go to a bar, you know, have a drink, in my case, a ginger ale or like whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, in the beginning, I never would go out for them with drinks. I'm like, you know, it's no point. And they're like, you know, you can always have a ginger beer. It's great. And I'm like, true. And I started going, and, you know, it's a real kitchen family, like, but it's still great. It's a very tight knit family. And, but for some restaurants, it's hard. For some people, it's hard.
Yeah. And now talking about 11 Madison, I'm assuming there aren't many Pakistani chefs working at fine dining places in the U.S. I may be making an assumption. I don't know. But that's how I see it. So how does like your cultural piece affect your interactions with your clients?
Honestly, it doesn't. Pakistan's pretty popular thanks to our news. You know, everybody knows what it is. Long time, it's no longer a problem. I have to tell where Pakistan is. You know, they all know where it is. And they're very curious about it. They love the food whenever I cook it for them. So, you know, I think it's a great icebreaker. It's never been an impediment or a problem.
And talking about food that's served at these fine dining restaurants, 11 Madison is like world-renowned restaurant, and there are many others. But what I see is most of them are like they center around French cuisine and French cooking. I don't, and then there are a few that will have like Japanese cuisine, but I don't see many that have other Eastern cuisines, like fine dining restaurants. Why do you think that is the case?
Actually, I don't think that's the case anymore. Because if you look at, you have to look at the nuances. There's actually very little French left. French is all technique now, you know. Mm-hmm. If you look at a menu, you'll see like different nuances. Like, you know, last season, I think it was the fall menu, we were serving a dosa.
Oh, really?
At EMP. You know, serving a dosa at EMP. And I thought it was brilliant. Yeah. You know, it was actually one of the guys, he worked there, and his mother's recipe. You know, so influences can come now are not just restricted. Like everyone, food is fusion now, but it's very subtle. Like you'll see turmeric, you'll see garam masala, curry powder, wadawan curry powder. And I'm like, what are we using this for? And they're like, something ridiculous. There's so many Japanese influences. So as long as you can make the pitch of fit together, like we have this crab dish now, which has cardamom. I had never thought of putting cardamom and crab together in that way. And it's delicious. It's amazing. And so I feel like, where does cardamom come from? It's a Persian, South Asian influence, like definitely.
Is there anything specific that you introduced or you would like to introduce from Pakistani cuisine?
I mean, definitely flavors, but it's, for me, I've just started working 6 months ago. We have this cook battle every every season. And if you get selected, like chef picks something from it, I have not yet been selected. But yeah, I think that's a way to do it. But it's really hard to marry those flavors. Because at John George, when I was there, they do a lot of spice. EMP is not more spice oriented. And for me, cooking is all about spice, like at least the Pakistani food.
What is your, like, what are some of your favorite spices?
I love cooking with pepper. I feel like pepper is so underrated.
Like, is it like red pepper or
no,
green
like
pepper?
Black pepper, like straight up black pepper. I feel like it's so underrated. It brings so much to food. That ginger, you know, I think a little bit of turmeric goes a long way.
I mean, in Pakistani cooking, and I, despite the fact that I don't like to cook, I cook almost every other day. Yeah. And the spices that I use, that I was taught, are like staple four spices are like, you have turmeric, you have red pepper, you have coriander powder, and then you have salt. Those are the four
you
basic.
You forgot the cumin.
No, I don't use
you
it as.
You really don't?
I mean, I don't use it as often as I would like to, but I will just use like cumin as is and not in a spice form.
For me, it blows my mind. Like, I feel like I've studied so much. Or, you know, I've worked in so many restaurants, tried my best to learn. But one thing I still can't wrap my head around is, in Pakistani food, everything has what? Salt,
yeah,
pepper, a little bit of turmeric, a little bit of red chili powder, a little bit of cumin powder, a little bit of coriander powder. Yet everything tastes so different. Like,
yes,
everything, like, at John George, I would cook a lot from my chef, my executive chef, Chef Mark. And he would ask me the recipes, like, hi, what did you put in this? And I'd go like, chef, I put a little cumin, and I put in this. He's like, it's always the same, but it always tastes different. So either you're lying or you're not telling me what it is. And I'm like, chef, I swear to you, it's literally the same thing. I don't know how it tastes different.
And it's even the ingredients are similar. Like, you'll have onions and tomatoes, and you'll just fry the onions and put tomatoes.
I'm such a lazy Pakistani cook. It makes me laugh. Like, people see me cook Pakistani food and they literally laugh. Because I think the only time I fry onions from scratch is when I'm making khichdi. Is that's when I like to have like fresh fried onions on top, because I love masala khichdi. You know, that's my comfort food.
I've never eaten that.
I don't know. I never. My grandmother used to make it for me, like masala khichdi, because I love masala khichdi on like fresh cilantro, like coriander, and like masala, like fried onions on top. I love that. But other than that, it's like packaged fried onions all the way, and packaged ginger garlic paste. Like, we have this lady who comes over and cooks for us sometimes, and she goes like, "How are you a chef? And do you use like, like the Shan, you know, ginger garlic paste?" I'm like, "Cause it's convenient."
Yeah, and you're cooking all day long,
yeah,
so maybe
and I
you
love
need
it.
A break.
You know,
yes.
Like, I'm like, I don't. How much of a difference? Like, I'm not an elitist. Like, I'm not a stuck up when it comes to using shortcuts. I'll 100% use them.
You went to Culinary Institute of America, right?
Yeah.
Now, there are some people who would argue that there is no need to go to a culinary institute, like, or a school to learn cooking. What is that you learned there that you think you would not have learned otherwise?
I actually don't think it's important to go to culinary school either. Really? At that time, I was a career change. I didn't know anybody. I had nobody to follow. Also, I had no training. I'd gone to Awari, it's a hotel in Pakistan, and I worked there. But over there, I learned a lot. I learned how to be in a kitchen, to be a part of the team. But I wanted like formal education, right? also it was an entryway for me to get into United States and be a part of the network where I could actually learn hands-on. Like, I couldn't just get up from Pakistan. At that time, I didn't know I could just get a J-1 visa and join a restaurant, right? I would have saved my $200,000 had I done that and done a lot with it. But going to CIA, more than cooking, which you learn. Cooking, they'll teach you techniques, cuisines, and you learn discipline.
Yeah.
I think the difference between a cook and a chef is discipline and how you manage things around you. Because once you are training to become a chef, I still don't consider myself a chef. I call myself a cook. I'm training to be a chef. Mm. It's mostly managing ingredients, managing time, managing people around you. That discipline is a lot more important. Cooking is a very small part of your day. Because if you don't manage those things right, your cooking is not going to come to anything.
So when I think about cooking, I think about a lot of precision and repetition, right? There are things that you have to do every day. You can't find something new every day you wake up. Do you think people with certain temperament can be good at it? Is it more intuitive or is it like an intellectual process where you just learn and get better at it?
Look, repetition is a part of cooking. Especially when you're working in a restaurant, that's what it is. You have one station and you're going to do the same thing again and again. I am fortunate enough to be part of a restaurant which changes their menu every season. So I have something new to learn every season. So I do it for 2 months, 3 months, depending on the scope of our menu. And then we have something new. But there are many, many restaurants which do the same thing again and again and again and again. And there's no harm in it. Because you might not learn everything in cooking every day, but you encounter a new problem every day, which keeps it pretty exciting. Like every day I go to work, there's some new shit show which is waiting for me, you know?
So share some examples with us. Like, what are some of the problems you guys face?
As simple as, like, we ran out of an ingredient, or the ingredient came wasn't good enough, or the delivery came, like, 3 hours late, or, you know, the person who was prepping it for you, you know, like, cut it too short or too long, or the color isn't nice. Like, for example, we have this watermelon salad at work these days. And the watermelons come in from this farm in Pennsylvania, Lancaster, you know. But when you cut the watermelon, there are whites on it. The chef's like, throw it in the garbage. So we have to run to Italy to get it, you know. It's like, I'm not even doing that. There's some guy who's doing it. But you see these things and you just laugh. You're like, you know, sometimes even though you think you have everything under control, nothing's under control. But, you know, the food will still go out at the exact time it's supposed to go. You know, something as simple as, like, one of the other days we're doing this okra pearls. It's like, you know how we cook okra, we discard the seeds. Mm. These people take the seeds, pickle them and serve them with caviar. And at first I was like, what is this? But, you know, it works. You know, they're geniuses. It works really, really well. And when it was time for service, the chef is like, these okra pearls look a little yellow. And so we all had to come together and just, like, shuck okra, like, peel it and, like, not peel it, like, just take out all the seeds for okra. And, like, all of a sudden we had this entire big bucket of okra, which we're all, like, just doing. And we're like, wow, does the color matter that much? But, you know, it's all about nuances and precision. And if that's the chef wants, that's what he's going to get. So it's like, it keeps it interesting. It's never boring. Like, I can never say work was boring today.
Yeah. So let's get out of the kitchen for a minute. So we spoke about how the cuisine is changing. It's becoming more inclusive.
Absolutely.
Is it true for the clients that you see as well? Like, do you see diversity in the kind of clients that you're getting? Or is it because when I think about 11 Madison, I think about, and I don't want to be stereotypical, but I will be, like this older white couple
actually
sitting there.
You would be surprised. So right now my role is a cook server. So cook server is somebody who cooks in the kitchen but also goes into the dining room to present some dishes. And I have, the last time I served water or poured water, which I don't have to do right now, was in culinary school where they give us a service class where they teach you how to mise a table, how to set a table, how to take orders, how to serve the dining room, basically. So it's been quite a while since I've done that. And my chef was like, would you be, because like I'm here at this restaurant for like about 3 years. He's like, do you want to do this role? I think it's a good way to learn a different aspect of the business. And I was like, yeah, you know, I wouldn't mind doing that. And now that I'm also in the restaurant, that's how I met your friends, you know?
Yes.
We actually have a very diverse crowd. We get a lot of Desi people. We get a lot of Indians, a lot of Bangladeshis, a lot of Pakistanis, a lot of Koreans, a lot of Chinese people. We get people from Israel, Turkey, everyone. Like, I can't tell you one or the other doesn't come. It's like, it's a destination. And as for, I think the least amount of people I see are older white people. You see a lot of young people, a lot of young couples, a lot of people, youngsters. Like the other day, I'm pretty sure we had this table. It was a two-top. It was like 18-year-olds on a date. And I was like, this is so cute. Like, this is amazing. Like, and we see these little kids. Like, we had a family of five the other day. There were these two, three sons. And they're like, I think 3, 5, and 7. And they're like eating this food, like a, you know, like an entire tasting menu, and they had a very strong opinion about each and every dish. They were so interested, and I think it's amazing.
So a bit of a backstory about how I found out about your work, and you mentioned about my friends. So my friends, for listeners, my friends were at 11 Madison. They were celebrating a milestone birthday and they met Haya. And then we met later and I was asking them about their experience at 11 Madison. And then they were like, they started talking about you, Haya. And they were like, oh my God, it was so nice. And we were so surprised, pleasantly surprised to see like a Pakistani chef there. And then I was like, okay, I was so intrigued. I was like, I have to interview this girl, and this is how we connected. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah,
right?
It was pretty amazing. I saw my LinkedIn and I was like, huh? I'm like, wow, those guys even remembered my name. That's amazing.
And I'm glad they did, because my first question was, do you know her name? And they were like, yeah, Haya. And then I was like, can you connect me with her? And they were like, just look her up. And that's how I was like, oh, I should do that. So Haya, you also took a year off to travel. You took a sabbatical, you traveled, you experienced different cuisines. What did you learn?
Traveling is, it's pretty exhausting. I thought it would be like, I was actually jumping from one country to another quite often. So I just wanted to take everything in. So I'm really, really greedy. Like I don't like to rest at all. So I was just going from one place to another. I had a great time. I think at the end of the day, we're a lot more similar than we are different. And food is, again, the bind thing that can connect us all.
So what countries did you travel to?
I started in Italy and then I just kept on going and going and going. Covered Netherlands, Spain, Germany, France, Montenegro, Bosnia. I mean, it's an exhausting list. I really went hard. And then I kept on going to Pakistan, stopped in Dubai, went to Malaysia, Singapore, Thailand, just kept on going wherever I could.
And what does future hold? What are you planning to do, say, in the next, I don't know, 5 years? Have you even thought about that?
I mean, of course, you think about a lot of things. But, you know, history has proven that whenever I plan something, my life, I take things as they come, right? So, like, I would have a game plan. But if I get an opportunity or if I think something's better, I can change my course in a minute. I'm very, very flexible and very, very open to change. For now, I want to just work at 11 Madison for the next 2.5 years are left. And I can keep on working more depending on how it goes. But for now, I just want to really work on my skills. Like, put my head down, work. I took a year off. It was hard to get back into that whole, work mode. But I definitely, what I know for now is that I'm going to stick around at 11 Madison for the next 2.5 years. And then I'll take another year off.
And do what?
I just want to travel. I want to go to Australia, New Zealand, Africa, you know, like just cover as many more countries as I possibly can.
And what kind of reaction have you gotten from people in Pakistan, your family, your friends? What do they think now?
Honestly, now then, they would obviously make fun of me, but they've always been so supportive. Like, I am so fortunate that, you know, you spoke of isolation. I have never felt a day when I was isolated, because even though I live so far away from home, I have an amazing system, like, of friends, like family, and they're always watching out for me, and they're all so supportive. They're all my biggest cheerleaders. It's amazing.
I ask all my guests this in the end: if you were to describe America today in a word or a phrase or a sentence, how would you describe it?
It's a melting pot. You know, it's been extremely kind and welcoming to me. It's truly welcomed me in all ways. And, you know, it's been great.
A few guests have mentioned Melting Pot. And when I think about Melting Pot, I always think about us, all of us being similar. Do you think we should like reinvent the notion of Melting Pot into something that's like we are not all the same. We are like, we are integrated, yet we all maintain our own identity in a way.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of America. You know, you are all the same, yet you can hold on to your identities. And I find that amazing. They let you be the way you want to be. You do whatever you do you.
Yeah.
And I think it's regardless of whatever the political climate is right now, that's not what America is. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like there's one person who's going on about it and it's not going to prevail. Even if people are stronger than that, people are better than that.
Thank you so much, Haya. This was great. This was amazing. Thank you for coming on our show.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. We have a website, alienchroniclespod.com. You can check us on Twitter at ChroniclesAlien and Instagram at The Alien Chronicles. Come back next time when we have another inspiring story. And in the meantime, stay connected.